Hello again. Here we are. Welcome back. Last round here. So, are we feeling a little tired? Yeah. It's been a long day. So, let's wake up a little bit just before we launch into talk. And let's all together read paragraph 14. Everyone got it? Therefore, reverting to delusion does not mean to accept a thief as your child. It does not mean to accept your child as a thief. Great awakening is to accept the thief as a thief. Reverting to delusion is to accept the child as a child. Great awakening is adding a bit where there is a lot. Reverting to delusion is subtracting a bit where there is little. Therefore, you grope for the one who reverts to delusion and have him firmly in your clutches. You will meet the person of great awakening. Is the self at this time reverting to delusion? Is it undiluted? You should look into this and bring it out. This is interviewing a Buddha and a patriarch. Thief, child, Buddha, patriarch. Often when we first read Dogen, we think, oh, come on, what are you talking about here? I think Dogen deliberately kind of like puts us into confusion again. You know, just when we think, okay, I get it. There's awakening, there's enlightenment, but really they're the same. And somehow they're all woven together and, you know, we're starting to get a little bit of a picture. And then Dogen again says, you know, investigate this a bit more. Investigate this a little bit further. Because although he just told us that delusion and awakening, that discrimination and unity are really intimate, a kind of non-dual union, you know, a kind of intimacy there, here he warns us not to blur them. Don't blur them. Awakening is awakening, delusion is delusion, and in perceiving this clearly, we're not deceived. This is what I think he's telling us. Delusions are endless, right? The myriad things of the world are myriad. They're not going to suddenly disappear into like vanilla ice cream. They're all separate. But if we see them for what they are, we are free. Because we also see the truth of unity. Troubles arise when we're caught in the story of separateness and act from that story. Samsara, perhaps we could say, is a kind of blindness to the wholeness of reality. Samsara is a kind of blindness to the wholeness of our reality. Our common understanding is that the difference between awakening and delusion is great. The big difference. But Dogen writes that it is almost imperceptible. So close, so intimate. It's like adding a pinch of flour to a bowl that's full of flour. It's like taking a poppy seed away from a little pile of poppy seeds. So, when you find a person of delusion, like yourself, for example, like me, the person who is separate, you also discover the person who is awake. You discover the person who is intimate with all things. And then he says, study this. Think about this. That's what the thief and the child is, right? You don't take a thief as your child, or your child is a thief. A thief is a thief, a child is a child. And yet, the difference between awakening, between the intimacy of everything and the separateness of everything, is like a pinch of flour added to a big bowl of flour. Like taking a poppy seed away from a little pile of poppy seeds. I remember my Aikido teacher in Japan, who also studied Zen quite diligently with two different teachers. He said, the difference between awakening and delusion is like a piece of paper. It's as thin as a piece of paper. I never understood what he was talking about. But Dogen's telling us the same thing. It's as thin as a piece of paper. And in a way, you know, isn't it true? Within a space of a moment, we can be happy and suddenly enter the world of anger. We can be content and suddenly fall into frustration and despair. One moment we have our car keys, the next we don't.
And then we do again.
And then we do again. Right? But look at the kind of roller coaster we go on, right? Everything's okay. And then they're there again, right? As thin as a piece of paper.
Michael, I'm curious why he chose thief and child for his two images.
Because thief we think as something we don't want. The separateness we don't want. We consider it kind of a negative view. I think that's why. And child, you know, a child is a child, you know, something we can hold and cherish and love. That's what we want. So we want the awakening, we want the unity, but we don't want the separateness. I think that's what he's getting at. Okay, so we're, just to, so I can get through, I want to just, again, we'll skip a little bit here. Now let's go to 16. So again, remember this is really looking at, like, what is this connection between awakening and delusion, or between unity and the myriad things. So 16 here. Let me just kind of quickly read it, and then we'll look about it. Since the monk asks, when a person of great awakening reverts to delusion, what's it like? He is still uncertain about the time precisely of reverting to delusion. The verbal expression of this time is, a broken mirror doesn't reflect again. A fallen blossom can't climb trees. When a fallen blossom is truly a fallen blossom, even if it climbs beyond a 100-foot pole, it is still a fallen blossom. Since a broken mirror is precisely a broken mirror, whatever livelihood it expresses, it will be the same reflection that doesn't reflect again. Taking up the message in the saying, broken mirror and falling blossom, we should study the time when a person of great awakening reverts to delusion. Now, this is a little confusing, perhaps. But I think Dogen here is again pointing out that this is really a question not about before and after. Like, I'm awakened and now I'm deluded again, or I'm deluded and I'm going to get awakened at some point. It's not really about asking before and after, at least in Dogen's understanding. But really a question about how does a greatly awakened person operate in this world of myriad things? How do we allow our intimacy to shine forth in this world? This intimacy with all things. The moment of washing dishes, cleaning the house, driving to work. A fallen blossom is a fallen blossom. It's not going to become something else. It doesn't try to be anything else. A broken mirror is just a broken mirror. It's not going to reflect something that has reflected in the past. It's just as it is at this moment. One way to think about this, you know, life at times gets pretty rough, right? At times we become a broken mirror. We're no longer whole and complete. And sometimes we feel like a fallen flower, right? It was so sweet, you know, when we were, you know, last week in Puerto Vallarta. And here we are struggling with our life again. Sometimes it is. We're just a fallen flower. The person of awakening reverts to delusion, meaning is just here in the midst of his life and her life, exactly as it is. I understand this in a similar way to the famous koan of Zhaozhou, who I mentioned him a little bit earlier, right? He was famous Zen teacher in the Tang Dynasty. And this is the koan. I'm sure most of you have heard it before. A monk asks Zhaozhou, "I have just entered the monastery. Please give me some guidance." And Zhaozhou said, "Have you had breakfast yet?" And the monk says, "Yes, I've eaten." And Zhaozhou continues, "Then go wash your bowls." So the monk is asking, you know, in a sense, like, you know, what's the way here? How am I going to get to this understanding of ultimate reality? Tell me the answer, please. Give me the guidance that I need to, you know, do all the koans, do the yoga, get the big light bulb turned on. But Zhaozhou then takes the monk out of his head and out of, kind of away from his ideas and into the world of the myriad things. Or he turns his view away from this longing for something different and brings him right back where he is, which is the only place we can really be alive. This is the only place where everything is whole and complete. So, wash your bowls. Immersed in work, immersed in activity, there's nothing else that we need to add or to gain. This is how a great person of awakening reverts to delusion. Make sense? Just here, washing our bowls when it's time to wash our bowls. Holding a hand of a friend who's in distress when it's time to hold the hand of a friend who's in distress. Moment after moment, we need to make decisions. We can't live in some happy place where we feel free. Moment after moment, we have to offer our life to this world. This is what Dogen is telling us. This is how a person of great awakening reverts to delusion.
So reverting to delusion is not a pejorative phrase here.
It's not a pejorative phrase. It's acting in this world. That's what reverting to
means. That's what he means.
That's what he means. We act in this world.
What's pejorative?
It means kind of negative.
Oh, okay.
Like this is, we don't want that.
Yes, okay. Thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
And so following that through the broken...
What's the other word for revert, please?
fall into, go back into.
Fall back.
So you're going to say, Kate?
Well, that following that through, then, you know, the broken mirror or the fallen flower, are images of, that we associate with, you know, death or destruction.
Mm-hmm.
But in another sense, if what's falling away or breaking is our rigidity, our rigid views of the self, we can turn that to be not pejorative, the broken mirror, the fallen flower.
Mm-hmm.
In that moment, it's a fallen flower. It's a broken mirror. It's manifesting. And of course, it changes and changes and changes. Yeah.
Another question?
I've heard delusion referred to as a veil often, and I was trying to tie together in my mind how those metaphors might work together. I'm not sure if they're in contradiction with each other or if they work well.
But Dogen is telling us that the idea of delusion is something negative. We got to get over it. In the sense that the kind of main delusion, as I think I mentioned before, that Buddhism addresses, is this idea that we are separate and alone and cut off from everything. And we struggle with that. And it seems like it's us against the world. So the theme that runs through this is that this world exactly as it is with all its separateness is at the same moment exactly as it is completely whole and complete and intimate. Everything is intimate with each other. They're both true. And they're when we can really kind of deeply penetrate that, then the need to get enlightened is no longer there. That kind of striving, which then is still separating the world between this and that, is gone. And we can act freely. As we act both in the world as necessary, you know, whatever we need to do, we function, but we do it with a sense of ease and grace and wholeness, understanding the completeness of everything.
Which is awakened, which is being awakened.
Which is being, yeah.
One who reverts to delusion is awakened.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah, one who reverts to delusion is awakened and acting in the world.
Right.
Understanding both. Understanding this world of separateness and understanding at the same time it's all intimate.
Right.
That there isn't a separation there that we have so long being entangled up in. That is our misconception. And in a way, you know, how could it be any other way? We know everything comes from something else. Everything is conditioned. Everything arises from something else. It's all connected in that way. You know. And sometimes I wonder, you know, like, you know, when, you know, when a mother gives birth to a child, at what point does that child become separate? And a pregnant woman carrying the child, you know, is that child not separate from the mother? And, you know, at what point does it become separate? And my feeling, you know, I can ask, say, a mother who is now like, you know, 60, 70, are you separate from your child? Is your child somehow completely different and separate from you? And I bet most mothers would, you know, say, of course not. Yeah, of course not. Even though that cord, you know, was snipped, you know, 50 years ago or something, 40 years ago, they're not really separate.
They are and they aren't.
They are and they aren't, yeah. But our habitual way of acting and being in this world is, it's separate. it's separate, and the world can hurt me, and I need to protect myself, and you know, I don't trust that person, and all of that can be true to a certain extent, but also it's not true. Is that okay for now? Should we go on a little bit more? Okay. So let's have a look at 18. Okay. So actually, let's read this together again. That was kind of fun. Ready? Truly, great awakening has no starting point. Reverting to delusion has no starting point. There is no delusion that covers over great awakening. Taking up three layers of great awakening, we make half a layer of slight delusion. Since the mountains are great awakened because of the snowy mountains, trees and rocks are greatly awakened by trees and rocks. The great awakening of the Buddhas is greatly awakened because of sentient beings. The great awakening of sentient beings is greatly awakened to the greatly awakened of the Buddhas. This has nothing to do with before or after. The present great awakening is not self or other. It has not come, yet it fills the ditches and clogs the moats. It has not gone, yet beware for seeking it from another. Why is this? It goes along with that. So Dogen tells us here, both great awakening and great delusion, the myriad things of this world, have no boundary. They have no boundary. We separate them and think this is over here and that's over there, that's left, that's right, that's black, that's white. But Dogen says, you know, when we look closely, we see there is no boundary. Delusion does not obstruct awakening. The fact of separateness does not obstruct also the truth of oneness, of unity. An awakening does not obstruct a delusion. The unity of things does not obstruct its separateness. It's kind of, you know, remember I mentioned that, you know, the fingers and the hands. You know, the fact that the hand, the unity of the hand does not obstruct the fingers. The kind of separateness of the fingers does not obstruct the fact that it's a hand. I mean, maybe that makes no sense to you, but it's something that stuck out to me that another Zen teacher talked about, Shohaku. He says, great awakening is found even in the smallest delusion, even in the smallest thing, there is unity. Nothing stands outside of this sense of everything being interconnected. Nothing stands outside Indra's net. The vast snowy mountains, which I think are the Himalayas, is my guess, are greatly awakened. They too are part of this wonderful net. The small trees, the rocks, you know, this kind of opposite view, you know, they too are fully part of this. Right? The little minnow, the great whale, all part of this interconnected net. Nothing outside is needed to support this. Our awakening and the Buddha's awakening are not two. Nor is awakening bound by the past of somehow not being awakened and the present of being awakened. He said, it's not a matter of time. It's not a matter of getting it now because you didn't have it then. You have always been awakened. This is always present. It's a little confusing because we know we're so caught on like, when's it going to happen? Great awakening, this interconnectedness is all-inclusive. It fills the small spaces, it fills the vast spaces. There is awakening that is, there is great awakening that is beyond, that is inclusive, beyond large and small. And then he tells us, and you should not follow others and rely on them. In other words, you know, don't trust me. Don't rely on me. You know, this is something everyone, we all need to investigate for ourselves. We are at the same time independent and at the same time in concord with everyone. Okay, next one. Let's read that one together too. So let me just check. I have to make sure I got my numbering right on here. This is the one about the preceptor?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, number 19, yeah.
Do you
want to
do just 19?
Yeah, just 19 for the moment. Yeah, because I want to talk about Vimalakirti. Okay, ready? Go. The preceptor of Mihu in Zhengzhou had a monk asked Yangshan, do people nowadays still have use for awakening or not? Yangshan said, it's not that they don't have awakening. They can't help but fall into the second rate. The monk returned and presented this to Mihu. Mihu was the assented to it. Okay, now this is really, I know you won't get this. Because it refers to a famous koan in the Book of Serenity, the Shoyoroku. It's another collection of koans. And this one is, this one refers to a story that comes from the Vimalakirti Sutra, which is a story about this famous layman who was greatly awakened and who everyone, all the bodhisattvas and kind of trembled before him because he was so awakened and so skillful that he would kind of point out where their weaknesses were all the time. And so they didn't want to go talk with him. In fact, the sutra begins with he kind of, as a skillful means, he becomes sick, you know, to kind of, we're not quite sure why, but he kind of presents himself as being sick. And so the Buddha talks to all the great bodhisattvas, like, you know, Manjushri and all these other great disciples of his, says, oh, you should go pay your respects to Vimalakirti. And one by one, they go, oh, I would love to, but, you know, when I was teaching over here, you know, he appeared and pointed out where I was, you know, not teaching quite right or where I was lacking. And, you know, I'm a little bit leery of this guy. And so after about, I think about 20 of these little stories that, you know, one disciple after another, eventually Manjushri, the great bodhisattva of wisdom itself, says, okay, well, I guess I'll have to go. And he goes to talk with Vimalakirti. So let me just read this little section here from the sutra itself, and this, maybe it will make a little more sense. So, when all of the disciples and the bodhisattvas had given their explanations why they couldn't go to pay their respects to Vimalakirti, then they called upon Manjushri, the great bodhisattva of wisdom, and said, why don't you go? And so Manjushri says, okay, I'll go. We'll all go together. And we go there, and then wouldn't you know it, Vimalakirti again says, oh, thank you for all coming. Now, what's your understanding of emptiness? And so all these poor guys, you know, are going around, you know, giving their explanation of emptiness, and he kind of goes, he kind of like, oh, that, you're 50% there, you're 10%, you know, well, 80%, not quite right, not quite right, not quite right. And so Manjushri finally steps in to probably save face of save everyone's face, and he says, "Good sirs," like all the people who have given their explanation about emptiness to. He says, "You've all spoken well." And teachers, that's one thing teachers do, right? Oh, that, you know, you're completely wrong, but you did a good job. He says, but nevertheless, all your explanations are themselves dualistic. Right? And emptiness is all about not being dual, right? It's that kind of great awakening, not being dual. He says, to express nothing, to say nothing, to explain nothing, to announce nothing, to indicate nothing, and to designate nothing, that is the entrance into non-duality. This is Manjushri speaking, right? And then Manjushri turns to Vimalakirti, this famous layman who has poked fun at everybody, and he says, we've all given our own teachings, noble sir. Now may you elucidate the teaching of the entrance to the principle of non-duality. Let's hear you speak now. Whereupon Vimalakirti kept his silence and said nothing at all. And Manjushri, after a while, applauded Vimalakirti. Excellent, excellent, noble sir. This is indeed the entrance to non-duality of the bodhisattvas. There is no use for syllables, sounds, or ideas. So, going back to the original koan that we just read, do people nowadays still have use for awakening or not? This is asking, if non-duality, if this awakening, if our unity is the ultimate truth, why do we still have to engage in practice? If everything is one, why do we have to keep practicing? Why do we have to do this practice anyway? Doesn't that make sense? Right? And this is the very question that took Dogen to China as a young man, searching for this answer. If we are already enlightened, if we already have awakening, if the Buddha nature, we share the Buddha nature with everything in this universe, as everything is interconnected, why do I have to practice? That's a good question. Why do we have to practice? Well, he comes up with a kind of answer for us. And I'm going to, I should keep an eye on the time.
You can't leave us here, Michael.
Time's up.
Okay, so you want to... You're good, you're fine.
I'm still okay. Okay, good. Okay, let's skip... Let's just, I'm just going to skip the 20 because he then goes back to this idea of time that's not talking about the past, he's talking about right now. But let's have a look at 21. So let me just read this and then we'll continue on. Do they still have use for awakening or not? Quietly studying these words, you should exchange them for your breast. Exchange them for the crown of your head. In other words, you know, really study this deeply. Really consider this very, very deeply. Become very intimate with it. So with that little incentive, let's just go to the next paragraph, which then we're going to begin to open up this this last koan a little bit more. Let's read it together again recently. Recently, the shaved head of the great Sung said, awakening to the way is the basic expectation. So saying, they vainly await awakening. Nevertheless, they seem not to be illuminated by the radiance of the Buddhas and ancestors. They pass by, neglecting the fact that they should study with a true good friend. they should not be liberated even in the advent of the old Buddhas. So Dogen begins by complaining about the monks in China at this present time, which is now the Song Dynasty, a little bit later than the Tang Dynasty that we talked about earlier, saying that they expect awakening to happen at some point in the future. Does that sound familiar? Like, do you have that feeling that you would like, you know, expect awakening to happen at some point in the future?
Yes.
Like the Song monks? He says, they do not consider that great awakening is the matter of this moment. They are not aware that they are verified by all beings, that they are intimate with all things. They forget that they need a good teacher. The teacher is themselves. Even a Buddha, as he says in the last line, could not lead them to awakening. If we strive, you know, diligently for, you know, some point I want to get awakened, we have this idea of what it is, that leads us in the exact opposite direction. We start in this kind of delusion, and we do need that kind of motivation. But Dogen is pointing out, at some point we have to let go. Because, as he's tried to tell us over and over again, this world is already this world of interconnectedness and of great intimacy. It's not something we're going to create. It's not something we're going to make. The way that we will open up to this or allow it to come forth fully is by letting go. Letting go of our ideas, letting go of our expectations, letting go over and over again. And how do we let go? Well, Dogen promotes the practice of Zazen. We sit over and over again, releasing our thoughts, releasing, releasing. And in this releasing, we become more and more intimate, perhaps I could say, with our life exactly as it is, with the wholeness of our life. Not by trying to get something, but by letting go. Let's do the next paragraph too. The words, "Do they still have use for awakening or not?" do not say that they do not have awakening. They do not say that they have awakening. They do not say that awakening comes. They say, "Do they have use for it or not?" It's like asking, how has the awakening of today nowadays been awakened? For example, if we say that they get awakening, we wonder whether sometime they did not have it. If we say that awakening has come to them, we wonder where it was until then. If we say that they have become awakening, we imagine that awakening was already there. The monk does not say it like this. He is not like this. Yet when he speaks of how awakening is, he says, do they have use for it? In Dogen's understanding, this question does not deny a person has awakening or does not have awakening, or that awakening will happen at some point. He said that's not the question. It's asking about the nature of awakening without the confusion and misunderstanding of awakening not existing in the past at some point, or awakening, we get awakened through our practice, but simply awakening right now, as it is. He's really asking, what is it to be awakened? What is this person of awakening? What is this person of awakening? So, then the explanation comes. At last, I hope. So, let's read the last little bit here.
24.
Okay. Still, Yangshan says that while we can speak of awakening, we can't help but fall into second rate. He's saying that the second rate is also awakening. The second rate is like saying become awakening or get awakening or awakening has arrived. He has said that come and has come are also awakening. Therefore, it seems that while lamenting the fall into the second rate, he eliminates the second rate. One may think that the second rate that has become awakening is also a true second rate. Therefore, though it may be a second rate, though it may be 100 or 1,000 rate, it should still be awakening. It is not that since there is second rate, it exists where some prior first rate is left behind. This would be like, for example, saying that while we take ourselves yesterday to be ourselves, yesterday's self takes today's as a second-rate person. The present awakening does not say that it's not yesterday's. It has begun now. This is how we should study the matter. Therefore, Great Awakening's head is black. Great Awakening's head is white.
That clears it right up.
I thought it would. So the second rate is referring to the world of duality, this kind of everyday world that we live in. So Yangshan says, of course, you know, we may have experience of awakening, we may have some understanding of awakening, but we can't help but fall into the second rate.
In other words, the everyday world.
The everyday world. And it seems like, oh, that's too bad. That's too bad. Too bad I couldn't stay up there, you know, on the top of the mountain. I've got to come back down and, you know, deal with all this messiness. The brambles have to, you know, make my way through more brambles of this life. But Dogen is saying, no. That's not it either. Reality includes both the relative and the absolute. Our true reality includes both our bodies, our minds, the, you know, getting sick, getting old, having birthday cake. It includes all of that and the absolute and our interconnectedness with everything. Our life, our true life, includes both unity and the myriad things. And Yangshan, this teacher Yangshan, at least according to Dogen's understanding, while seeming to lament this fall into delusion again, is in fact proclaiming that everything is awake. Even the things we think are second rate, that too is part of the unity. That everything is present. The relative does not negate the absolute. When we're stuck in this relative world, it doesn't mean the absolute is suddenly no longer there. Nor does the absolute negate the relative. If we're in some deep samadhi experience and have this wonderful flight of feeling of unity with everything, that does not negate the relativeness of our life. The fact that you have a body and need food and have relationships. And yet, so hard to understand. A monk asked the great Zen master, Mazu, please tell me directly, master, the meaning of Bodhidharma's coming from the West. Please tell me, what is this all about? What is this great awakening? And Master Mazo said, "I'm tired today. I can't explain it to you. You should go ask Shitang. Go ask Shitang, another disciple. He can tell you." So the monk walked over and asked Shitang about it. And Shitang said, "Why are you asking me? Why don't you go ask the master? Ask Mazo." And the monk said, "Well, no, he told me to ask you." And Shitang said, "You know, I'd love to, but I have such a headache today. I can't explain it to you. You should go ask Baijiang over there." And so the young monk went over to Baijiang and asked Baijiang about it. And Baijiang said, "I understand nothing about that question. I don't get it at all." So the monk walked back to the head of the monastery, that's Master Mazu, and said, "You know, I went over there and he has a headache. I went over there, he doesn't know anything about it. And you're too tired? What's going on?" And the great master said, "Shitang's head is white, while Baijiang's head is black. Black and white. No difference." World of myriad things, the world of absolute interconnectedness, no difference. Dogen went to China with that profound question. If we are already awakened, if we already are part of this great web of interconnectedness, why do we need to practice? Or we could say, if I'm already awakened, why do I suffer so? Why am I full of struggle? In this work, this Daigo, Dogen brings together what we usually think of as separate. The day-to-day world of constant change and the shining world of enlightenment. The shining world of awakening. In this understanding that Dogen is showing us, this view that Dogen is presenting to us, awakening is not something we wait for. It's not something that will come, but is present right now. His expression for this is practice realization. In Japanese, it's shuto ito. Awakening is not something we get, but something that is always present. Delusion is also always present. The separateness of all things is always also present. This awakening and delusion are intimate. The separateness and the unity are intimate. So we don't practice to achieve some state. We practice to, now we struggle over what to say this, but to allow the free manifestation of this dynamic functioning between awakening and delusion, between the myriad things and the unity of everything. To fully give our life to the interdependence of all things. Dogen, in this chapter, in this fascicle, is encouraging us to drop our views of somehow having a solid, independent identity and fully inhabit the moment as it is. Just as it is. Awakening, he says, does not stand outside our daily life, but is woven throughout the world, like a fabric, I mentioned. And we practice, I would say, maybe to free the intimacy that is inherently here. To allow our life full expression, we practice. Any questions? Yes,
yeah,
Tim.
Michael, I wonder, it seems in Dogen's, his teaching,